Many of you were with us yesterday evening, and some of you were not. So, just a little background and review. During this visit, this yesterday, today, and this weekend, the topic of focus is upon Canto 3, Srimad Bhagavatam chapter 30. Title of the chapter is Adverse Fruitive Activities. It's part of a extended 7-8 chapter long exchange between Lord Kapiladev, an incarnation of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears in Satya Yuga, in the very early stages of Satya Yuga, the first of the four Yuga cycles. And he's presenting a number of things. He's presenting the Yuga Dharma. Yuga Dharma is a process of meditation in Satya Yuga. He's presenting Sankhya philosophy, which goes well. It's part of the meditation process. And he's teaching the standard of pure devotional service. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, the purpose of the Vedas is, what's the purpose of the Vedas? To know Krishna. Vedaischa sayarvair, aham eva vedyo. Purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. And also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, what's the way to know him? Bhaktya mam. Abhijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvataha. The way that one can know Krishna, tatvataha, in truth, is only one method, through devotional service. Of course, there are different forms. We discussed this on Thursday evening. In the different yugas, those different processes, they're all an aspect of bhakti. So it's bhakti and bhakti and bhakti and bhakti, with an emphasis on meditation or performance of Vedic sacrifice or the performance of deity worship or the chanting of the holy name. All of them are angas or limbs of bhakti. The goal is pure devotional service. So we spent some time Thursday. Little overview of who is Kapiladev and each of the chapters leading up to this one, chapter 30. Mainly the attention went to chapter 29 because there's elements in chapter 29 that have bearing on chapter 30. Devahuti asks at the beginning of chapter 29, devotional service is pure. Is it possible that one can perform devotional service if one's consciousness is not yet pure, but is still influenced by the modes of nature? The answer is yes. Devotional service is pure, but one may be in the mode of ignorance, passion, goodness, and therefore they'll perceive and they'll participate in bhakti in different ways. And emphasis throughout the whole chapter was upon this idea of seeing with interest separate from the Lord's interest, even when worshiping the Lord. So separate interest in the mode of ignorance, separate interest in the mode of passion, separate interest. And there's, in the chapter, there's 5-6 terms, all indicating the separatist. Pratak, bhava, Bina Drik, Brina Darshana, and so on. So then we heard in the rest of the chapter different ways in which one can see separately or not separately. Where one's interest is separate or the same as the Lord's. Where in separate mentality one does not see supersoul within living beings. They worship the deity, form of the Lord, or they engage in devotional service of other types, but they don't see the Supreme Lord who's in the deity form within the heart of others as supersoul. They don't see that, and so therefore they see others separately. You can say when they see them according to their designation, not according to their true spiritual identity. And then a third, is to see the products or the fruits that come from work or activity, seeing them separate from the Lord, or seeing them in relation to the Lord and offering them to the Lord. So devotional service doesn't require karma sannyas, or stopping activity. Rather, it requires seeing the activity that one gift given by God and offering the fruit of the activity to the one who gave one the ability to do that activity, offer everything to Krishna. So those three areas. Again, seeing interest separate, seeing the living entity not part of the Supreme with supersoul residing in, but just seeing according to designation or covering, upadhi. And the third is work and the fruits of work and how one regards that. So emphasis, like 5-6 verses in a row that speak about the importance, in fact, the necessity of seeing with proper regard and respect, appropriate for one's position of the living beings being situated, respect to the living entity and the supersoul within that living entity's heart. Although behaviors may be different according to different position, still respect and respect and respect toward the living entity. So with that framework, we entered this morning into chapter 30, where the focus in 30 is on fruitive activities, again, work, and what is produced from the work that we do, how does one regard it? If one doesn't see it in relation to the Supreme, then we'll see it separate from the Supreme, and that's the separatist mentality. So the separatist mentality may be us, devotees, or practicing devotees trying to become free from our material contamination, or those that aren't interested in devotion to the Supreme at all. They're interested in the fruits of activities, period. Like the human, like animal, like kind of conduct, where it's territorial and woof woof, get away from my territory. You know how dogs are. Very protective of the little, whatever the little territory is. Even if they're a street dog, what to speak of somebody in their home, woof woof, stay away from my master's house, woof woof. So, becoming freed from that is necessary for spiritual progress. And if one doesn't understand that, then so this is the anatomy of that, which is not desirable. So, remembering the purpose is to respect all living entities. Living entities that may be so engaged, we need to respect the living entity. At the same time, we should understand what the behavior is. And the misfortune of someone that's engaging their life without devotional service, without the knowledge of how to become free from the unwanted part of the soul being in the material world. Suffering, misery. No, not having a peaceful state of mind and being quite unhappy. So it's not judgmental, it's compassion, understanding, like a physician may understand the disease of a patient and then be able to administer medicine. Very similar for practicing devotees, if we understand this chapter very carefully, compassion goes to those who are unfortunately struggling, unnecessarily struggling in material existence, or we ourselves who may be unnecessarily struggling in material existence because we forgot Krishna. So if we can connect those same activities to Krishna, it's uplifting. Forgetting Krishna, when using Prabhupada's phrase, one glides down to different positions of misfortune in material existence. So that's a little background. We covered the first four verses this morning. The role or the influence of time, which was mentioned in the previous chapter several times, is being carried over into the beginning, the first verse of this chapter. Time is an energy of the Supreme Lord, or is the Supreme Lord, is the influence of the Supreme Lord in this world. Lord Vishnu, Paramatma, moves things. We know from Bhagavad Gita, Maya Adyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sa Characharam. The moving and non-moving living beings are all under the influence of material nature, and material nature is under his direction. So here it's using the metaphor of a cloud that's moved by the wind. The cloud isn't thinking, oh, here comes the wind. Shh. Now I'm moving. But it's the wind that's moving the cloud. So similarly, living entities situated in the field of the material energy are being moved imperceivably by time. And time is just as the clouds are always changing in their shape, the configuration of matter is also ever changing. It's temporary, impermanent, and moving under the influence of time. So then the next message is, in material consciousness, one is pursuing things that are limited and temporary. And because they're limited and temporary, they don't satisfy the soul. So there's never the position of contentedness. We're always looking for a different configuration of matter. Isn't one. We're unsettled in our present circumstance, looking for a better configuration of matter. There's no happiness to be found, whatever the configuration of matter, because it's matter. And then it's all taken away, whatever it is that we have. We become attached to it. And then it's taken away by this means or that means or some means, the influence of time again. In text 3, even the body that we have, now you see it, now you don't. It comes and it goes. The very body is impermanent, and things in relation to the body, homeland, wealth, relations, family members, everything, it's all temporary. Unfortunately, the whammy or the bewilderment aspect of material nature is one thinks of it as permanent. You know that little passage from Mahabharata when Yamaraj goes to the lake where his four brothers are lying seemingly dead because they all went to drink water, but the Yaksha checked them and they drank water anyway, so they died. So then comes Yudhisthira, and the Yaksha says, before you drink water, you have to answer some questions. So he receives some number of questions. You know that section. So one of the questions is, what's the most amazing thing in this world? And the most amazing thing, Yudhisthira says, is that everyone is certain to die, yet everyone is thinking somehow I'll live forever. The most amazing thing. Which is exactly what's being said in text 3 of chapter 30. Although the body is impermanent, everything is temporary, all the things connected to the body are temporary, one thinks of it as permanent. I mean, we kind of know, kind of, but still we act otherwise and we're attached otherwise. And then text 4, it takes it broader. Whatever species a living entity appears in, although there may be that there are always miseries connected with embodiment and different types of miseries depending upon the species and, you know, the type. But Kapila Dev says he is never averse to being situated in such a condition. I mean, we whine and complain, but if somebody offers us another opportunity, like Prabhupada says in the next purport, supposing somebody approaches you and said, "My dear Prabhu, you have a certain situation, but if you like, you just go to sleep and when you wake up, you become a king." "No, I like my family, I like my situation, I like my home, I like my computer and my cell phone and my car, and I've got a nice bank balance, I think I'll just stay here, thank you." Whatever the situation. And in the purport of text 4, which we didn't discuss this morning, but we'll spend a little bit of time, it's a philosophical concept, but it's practical. It's more than just like another hard to pronounce word in Sanskrit that you can learn, and then you have another piece of information to hold up from your information basket. That's not the purpose. It's in the purport, if you have your little book or device or something, you can look at the purport of text 4. Prabhupada explains, as he does in a number of other places in his writings, Maya has two phases of activities. And the Sanskrit terms are prakshipatmika and avaranatmika. Those devotees that have read Prabhupada's books, you know those two terms. At least you've heard those two terms. And Prabhupada speaks of them. One is the throwing, the other is the covering potency. One potency throws the living entity into material existence, and the other one keeps the living entity there. So the avaranatmika, I'll just read a couple of two little passages from Prabhupada's books that speak of it. It's a technical term, so one of the places you'll find these kinds of technical terms is in Chaitanya Charitamrita, our postgraduate study. So one place is in Adi Lila, chapter 7, text 114. This chapter 7 is such a nice chapter, such an important chapter. When Prabhupada translated it, he had it published in a paperback book, he had it published in a hardback book, and then he included it in the entire Adi Lila. It's very important. It's specifically addressing how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu defeated impersonal philosophy when discussing with Shankaracharya. Prabhupada wanted his followers to understand the systems of logic that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used. But in that chapter 7, text number 114, these terms avaranatmika and pratyekshatmika shakti are presented. And I know it's here. 114. Yeah. Well, there it is. You know the verse from Bhagavad Gita where Krishna speaks of mayaya paritta jnana asarim bhavam ashrita. Does anybody know the whole verse? Mayaya paritta jnana. You know the verse, Sachi Kumar? So say that you don't know the whole thing. Huh? Yes? No? Maybe.
Three, four.
Huh?
Three, four.
Say it again. Prapadyante Yadevata? Naradama. Mayaya Paritagyana Asarim Pavamashritam. What's the translation? Can you read it? Oh, you don't have that page. Okay. Mayaya Paritagyana means that Krishna takes away the knowledge. Knowledge is stolen by illusion. Mayaya Paritagyana. The knowledge is stolen by illusion. In this Adi Lila chapter 7 purport, Prabhupada is saying that's what one of these two is. The Avaranatmika Shakti takes away the knowledge of the living entity. So an antidote for that is you study Prabhupada's books, so that then you can have transcendental knowledge, so your knowledge is restored by Prabhupada's books. And it's an antidote to that avaranatmika. Maya has two potencies with which to execute her two functions. The prakshepatmika shakti, the power to throw the living entity into the ocean of material existence, and avaranatmika shakti, the power to cover the knowledge of the living entity. The function of the avaranatmika shakti is explained in the Bhagavad Gita by the word mayaya paritagyana, knowledge that's stolen by illusion. And thrown into the material energy. Have you, just like we were discussing Thursday evening, what Devahuti was expressing to Lord Kapila, I think we've all experienced it. We know the philosophy. Mayaya Pratyagyana has been counteracted by our studying of Prabhupada's books, but somehow we remain implicated in matter. You know, there's some detachment that comes from knowing. We're really not part of this world. We're spirit soul. We belong in the spiritual realm. We belong engaged in Krishna service. So we, you know, it's easy to say yes to that. We believe it. We have faith in it. And somehow we find ourselves in illusory activities again. That's because the second one, prakshekatmika shakti, still has a hold on us. Maya still has a hold. We're not, you know, there's theory, but it's not fully realized knowledge yet. Here's another reference. This is from Dharma, the Way of Transcendence. The Sword of Remembrance. So this is Srila Prabhupada's a lecture put into the form of a book. Actually, this is Maya or illusion. Maya has two energies, the Avaranatmika Shakti and the Prakshepatmika Shakti. The Avaranatmika Shakti, we talked about that, covers a living entity with ignorance. Even though he is living a condemned life, still he will think, I am very happy. I am all right. That was text 4. His real knowledge is covered. And the Prakshepatmika Shakti throws a living entity down into the ocean of material existence and keeps him there. When somebody is trying to come to Krishna consciousness, the Prakshepatmika Shakti will dictate, why are you going to Krishna consciousness society? There's so many restrictions there, so many rules and regulations, better give it up. And the conditioned soul thinks, yes, this Krishna consciousness is nonsense. Let me give it up. So it's like, you know, petty weakness of heart, what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. My dear Arjuna, you're an Aryan. Anarya jushtam ashvargyam. How has this petty weakness of heart, hridaya dorbalyam, is the Sanskrit. Hridaya dorbalyam. Bala means strong. And dorbala means weak. How has this weakness of heart overcome you? That's this prakshipatmika shakti. I know what's right, but this weakness of heart, I don't do it. Because, you know, give me half a reason why not to do it, and I'm not doing it. Don't even give me a half a reason. Let the wind blow the wrong direction. I won't do it. No good reason at all. Just, there's the force of Maya keeping me. I can blame it on Maya, but, you know, Maya's keeping me in material existence. So, with these verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, Kapila Dev is giving clear instruction how these two features, avaranatmika, first comes throwing us into material existence, and then our real knowledge is covered. So again, the reverse. Real knowledge can become restored by reading Prabhupada's books. So please read Prabhupada's books. And then once you're convinced by the message of Srila Prabhupada's books, then what? Well, you have to act according to what the instruction says. But there may be weakness of heart. Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes, sometimes not. Too often, sometimes not. Sometimes. It's like a mantra, right? So we need bala. We need spiritual strength. And where does spiritual strength come from? It's come from Balaram. So chant your rounds nicely. You'll have spiritual strength. And then, in addition to your own strength, whatever spiritual strength, associate with those that have spiritual strength. Particularly those that are guiding you carefully in your Krishna consciousness, take strength from them, particularly through the instructions, like we discussed already. Just instructions, hold on to the instructions, and the instructions will carry you to the destination. There's potency within the instructions. Just all we have to do is adhere to, take shelter of the instructions. So our hearts have to be open in order to receive the instructions to get that extra strength that's beyond our own strength. And if our hearts close, and then we're like, you know, we're still in our seed state and there's no moisture getting in, nothing, no nourishment. So our hearts have to open to that sound vibration of the instruction. And proper regard for the instructor helps go in. Okay, so that brings us up to this evening's class. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So now we'll be discussing 5 through 8. We have the background, the setting is there. Now, from the previous chapter, we heard about the different grades of living entities according to sense perception development and consciousness and how many legs and life symptoms and so forth and so on. Now we're going to again hear about the soul's different position. The conditioned living entity is satisfied in his own particular species of life. Semicolon. While deluded by the covering influence of the illusory energy, that's this avaranatmika shakti, he feels little inclined to cast off his body, even when in hell, for he takes delight in hellish enjoyment. And the purport, Prabhupada explains, a classic. Once Brihaspati was offended by Indra, and Brihaspati cursed him. You become a hog. Fall from the heavenly planets and become a hog. So he fell and he became a hog. And after some time, Lord Brahma came and said, Indra, come on back. Your punishment is over. And at least the way the Prabhupada narrates the story, he says, how can I leave? I have my my wife, my female pig, and so many piglets. I have so much responsibility to look after here. I'm enjoying. Because the nature of Maya is such that whatever one's situation is, one becomes attached to it, although it is understood as well to be sources of misery. We understand the sources of misery part. We also are perhaps a little tuned into the fact that we're attached. Not so much attached to the misery, but we're attached to the sources of misery. And that brings the misery. But we're attached. Even if it's a hellish position. It's pretty amazing, isn't it? It's Maya. What is not? Here's where Prabhupada writes, by the influence of Maya, the conditioned soul becomes so affectionate towards this particular type of body that if he is offered, give up this body and immediately you will have a king's body, he will not agree. This attachment strongly affects all conditioned living entities. Lord Krishna is likewise personally canvassing, give up everything in this material world, come to me, and I shall give you all protection. But we are not agreeable. We think, oh, we're quite all right. Why should I surrender to Krishna and go back to his kingdom? Well, we may say, yeah, sure. And then not surrender or, you know, hang on, which is not surrender. Text number 6. Such satisfaction with one's standard of living is due to the eye and mind conception. Deep-rooted attraction for body and then the products of the body. Wife, home, children, animals, wealth, and friends. In such association, the conditioned soul thinks himself quite. Now, certainly there's the other side, as I've been commenting. We find it miserable, but the other side is we're attached. Now we would like our situations generally to be different because we're uncomfortable, but you know at the same time we're attached. It's very sad. It's due to the influence of Maya, and these two features. Largely, we forget that factually that we're a spiritual entity. We're the spark of life animating the body. We're not the body. But even if we get that one okay, you know, that still the throwing potency is in full force. So we try to budge a little bit. We get thrown back into the pool of association with matter and identification with matter, like that, very quickly. One who acts on the mental plane cannot get promotion to the spiritual, period. On the mental plane, we're identifying with. It's within the mind. So if you change your mind, then you can identify differently. But on the mental plane, we move because the mind is restless. The situation is never pleasing to the self, so the mind looks to this and looks to that. Never finds a position of happiness. That kind of activity is blocking us from access to the spiritual plane, to our natural position of happiness. In pursuit of happiness. It's sad. It's irony. But it's the material program. It's the pattern of, by design, of material existence. Text 7. Although he is always burning with anxiety, such fools always perform all kinds of mischievous acts with a hope which is never to be fulfilled in order to maintain his so-called family and society. So this goes into the activities of maintaining the illusion. And Prabhupada writes in the purport, it is said that as long as we are attached to this asat temporary non-existing society and family, we are always full of anxieties. So this is like, you know, the spirit of detachment that comes from knowledge. But the position of a devotee is not an impersonalist. Because in impersonalist, there's nice verse in chapter, in Canto 11, where there's this extreme, that extreme, and the devotee is neither, is not an extremist. And the side where there's too much attraction for fruitive activities and temporary material pleasure, the karma section of the Vedas is appropriate. For persons who are extremely detached, the Upanishad Gyan section is appropriate for them. And for the devotee, someone who's a good candidate for a devotee is neither too attached, neither too detached. Nice, isn't it? And then the message of bhakti can enter. That's us. So the message here is not, you know, throw away your families and throw away your, you know, your bodies and your duties. That's not the message. It's don't be too much attached over on this side. So you'll see this coming in the purport of the next verse, text 8. And that's as far as we're going to go. Text 8. He gives his heart and senses to a woman who falsely charms him with Maya. He enjoys solitary embraces and talks with her, and he is enchanted by the sweet words of the small children. And so Prabhupada is speaking pretty strongly against, he explains it in the second paragraph, but it's against Grihamedi life, overly attached to the bodily conception and the activities and the affairs in bodily relation. So just in case you think we're signing people up for the sannyas ashram at the end of class, that's not the case. What Prabhupada is explaining in the purport is the advocacy is not the grihamedi, the overly attached side, neither the, you know, overly obsessed with detachment side. It's the Krishna conscious position. It's not just like, you know, there's liberals and there's conservatives and there's moderates. It's not like that. It's not too much attached, not too detached, but acting in the position of bhakti. If you look at the second paragraph, he makes the distinction between the grihamedi and the grihastha. So far it's been speaking about the grihamedi. The love of a woman at home and the talk of the children make one a secure prisoner, and thus he cannot leave his home. Such a person is termed in Vedic languages a grihamedi, which means, quote, one whose center of attraction is home, unquote. Grihastha, that's what we're being trained to be, devotee grihasthas, refer to one who lives with family, wife and children, but whose real purpose of living is develop Krishna consciousness. One is therefore advised to become a grihastha and not a grihamedi. The grihastha's concern is to get created by into real family life with Krishna. In case you're getting a little worried about this subject matter. The detachment is to facilitate bhakti. The detachment from fruitive activities. The adverse consequences of forgetting Krishna. And when you forget Krishna, then the material attachment becomes stronger and stronger and stronger and overwhelming. And so then the purpose of human birth is lost. So it's not an advocacy for the sannyas ashram, although sannyas ashram is very nice. It's an advocacy for detachment from excessive attachment in these illusory ways, but rather than an advocacy for grihastha life. That's with Krishna at the center, letting go of those material aspects of over attachment and moving to the side where Krishna is at the center and a life in devotion to Krishna. I mean, I'll say two things and I think I'll end because I can imagine there'll be lots of questions on this topic. Maybe some of you attended or saw online, because I don't see too many people were at that, the Western, reaching the hearts and the minds of the Western audience, Western public. And one of the presenters was Kalakanta. He and I spoke at the Nrisimha Chaturdasi program, so if you saw that, that's Kalakanta. He and I were speaking. His service of late in the past 7-8 years has been a Krishna house at Gainesville, Florida, University of Florida campus. And he has some very strong opinions. He's, in fact, I would even say strident about his opinions with regard to the importance of elevating and giving credence to the role of young women in his ashram, and he feels it should be, opened purposefully, say strategically, for America at least. It may not be so appropriate in other parts of the world. That's okay. He doesn't mind. But from his involvement with college students, not just American college students, because I don't know, something like a third of the students involved in his Krishna House program are non-resident Indian students doing studies in Gainesville, the University of Florida. But he feels strongly that the success of his ashram, or his Krishna House situation, they're every year, it's really astounding, something 20 to 25 students per semester are involved in Krishna House, and they're chanting 16 rounds and following the principles and attending, a short morning program and taking Krishna Prasadam. I may be wrong with the statistic, but it's something like that. It's astounding because they're quality students, they're attracting quality students. And he has three applications for every spot he has. In fact, he has a policy that he doesn't allow someone to stay more than 1 year. After you've been there for 1 year, you have to rotate out to make room for all the others that want to rotate in. It's a really popular program. And he feels strongly that a key success is the position, giving and position for all different types of services. He feels very strongly about it. As an important strategy, particularly for young people in America or for American people. And anybody that's young knows what I'm talking about. Anybody that's a little bit older may not know what I'm talking about. But it's, certainly how young people feel. Not like free mixing. It's just, service roles and recognition of, the service that women can perform. Something like that. And then another point I wanted to make was I looked for it, I couldn't find it very quickly, but there's a place, at least one, where Prabhupada speaks, it writes in his purports that when, there's this language that seems male-oriented, and a male should not be overly attached to a female. It's vice versa. Because male means one who thinks I am the enjoyer, and women also think I am the enjoyer. So, that's anyway. The overly attached position goes both ways. It's not just, women are bad and men are good. But for, boo on women and yay for men. It's not, so it may seem like that. Prabhupada clarifies it. That's not his intention. It's the over being too much attached to the opposite sex is a cause of obscuring the spiritual path. One becomes lost in the affairs of the material energy, and it becomes night very quick, even maybe this night. One's spiritual journey becomes obscured by that. So while there's recognizing of one of the themes of this is what it's necessary to recognize we're not this body, and to respect the soul that's within and the supreme soul that's within. At the same time, we're also to not become not identify with the upadis, not become too much attached either to our identity, and you know, the finding some sense objects out there that seem appealing to me and become attached to them and trying to be the enjoyer of them. The main message is the fruit of activities, the tendency to be attached on the material plane. It's anartha. It's something unwanted within the heart that blocks our Krishna conscious life. He's teaching this to Devahuti. It's a long chapter, by the way, on just turning the theme around and around and in different ways to help detachment from matter and attachment to Krishna. Same as he did in chapter 26 with Sankhya philosophy, just, you know, the categories of that for self-identity, categories of matter, categories of spirit, we belong to the realm of spirit. So this is now in the mind, I and mine. In the mind category, there's activities of this body and then attachment to the products and byproducts of the body. Be detached from them, but utilize them in Krishna's service. Family life is completely natural. Yeah, that's another thing that I wanted to say that Kalakanta was teaching. He feels it's very important, while on the one hand to the students that are attending his class that become brahmachari, that's fine, and we'll help support that. Most of you, however, bluntly and frankly, will become grihasthas, and so we want to have proper training so that you can be well situated as grihasthas. And he feels that's a mature approach. So it's not boo on grihastha life. We'll lose more than half of our audience if that's the message. That's not the message. It's not the message of Bhagavad Gita. It's not the message of Bhagavatam. Krishna is not telling Arjuna, give up your duties and become a sannyasi. That's not Krishna's message. It's not the message of Kapiladeva to his mother either. You know, give me up and become a sannyasi or sannyasin. That's not his message. It's because he's answering her question, going back to chapter 25. How do I get free from this excessive attachment to the bodily conception of life and with it family? Because my mind is bewildered, my husband is now gone, like, etc. He's addressing her question. Become situated properly in Krishna consciousness with your various duties and services in life. So let's see if there's some discussion on this topic. Comments or questions? Have I intimidated you all? Or? I knew you'd have a question.
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
I had said that we have weakness of heart due to we can counter weakness of heart by getting spiritual strength, and one of the ways is to hold on to the instructions that we get, because there's a potency in instructions.
Yes.
And then you said that one has to be open to receiving and have a respect for the instructor.
Yeah.
So,
you heard very well.
That's right.
And now comes the application.
Yeah, there are two. I have two questions. One of them is, sometimes we get direct instructions, but...
Sometimes you get direct instructions. Is that what you said? Direct?
Yes.
I'm repeating back because my hearing is bad.
I said sometimes we can get direct instructions, but sometimes, often, there's no opportunity to get a direct instruction, but there's always instruction, like, from the books that we read. But it's also, my question is, like, then isn't everything an instruction? And it's like, you know, you can get confused in...
You never get confused. Come on. Well, so one thing to do is there are some instructions that you know, and you do those. And by doing those, something happens. You feel strength, you feel connection, you feel some clarity. And then there's some other areas that you were and maybe still are less clear on. But now with greater clarity and greater strength, there may be new clarity. And then, you know, it's very valuable that you have persons that are proximate that you can go to with those needing more clarity, please, kind of questions. We all need that. It's very helpful, at least, to say the least. Very helpful. So, there's always someone that's helping us, guiding us, and turn to those people. Now, one of the confusing things is you go to 10 people and you get at least 8 answers, if not 10. So be discerning about, the number of persons that you go to for advice, and specifically check your tendency to go to the ones that will say what you want them to say for this one, and the ones that will say what you want them to say for those kind. And so, like, you know, actually place ourselves that there's one of my godbrothers, Urjaswat, used to use his hands when he said this. He was a very capable Bach leader. He would go like this. I learned this. He was trained in the Los Angeles temple under Kurandar. He said you should always situate yourself under somebody and take guidance from a qualified somebody that can guide you. I learned that lesson, and I always teach that lesson. So it's a good lesson. And those, at least, if that some proximate person happens to be whatever, not available or something, you don't know exactly what to do in a particular circumstance. With the pattern that I just described, do those things that you know, and for some time, and for some sustained time, because then some strength and some clarity will come. And then, you know, open Prabhupada's books. You've had this happen, I'm sure it's happened to all of us. And voila, right there on that page is the instruction that you needed. Or maybe on page 2, but you know, very quickly, it's right there. Oh. Isn't it? And if neither of those things happen, just continue to be patient. Don't get worked up into this dilemma. Some things may take some time to work out. Your second question.
The second one is just simply, how to become more open.
How to become more open.
Receive.
Think of Hanuman. That's one that worked for me. Ram! Think of persons who have that capacity. You know, and his capacity is love. So it's hard, you know, if the heart is closed, love won't go in, even if love is being extended. So you know, moisture even can soften even a hard nut or seed or something. Just leave something, drops of moisture. And for you, you know, just regularly participate in kirtan, it'll make your heart open. Then it's easy for something to come in when that's there. Someone else. Sundarananda.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Can I ask a question from morning class? Or?
I guess so.
Thank you. Maharaj, specifically in the context
he
of...
He talks with both his hand and his mouth. It's really wonderful. Go ahead. Don't let me... I appreciate it. I don't embarrass you. I do it sometimes too.
Sorry. About... regarding the...
Now he's self-conscious. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
The question is about the motive, even in devotional service.
Motivation in devotional service.
Yeah, so...
Selfish motivation or the good kind?
Yeah, that is the doubt, Maharaj. What is fruitive in devotional service? Like an example?
Like, you want an example of the two?
I have an example I wanted to confirm.
You have fruitive. An example. Okay, go ahead.
So the... Like we understand very early on that... at least I understood very early on that I'm a spirit soul and I'm a servant of Krishna. So it's my duty to serve Krishna.
Fantastic.
And then understanding only.
Okay. It's a good start.
And then also we understand that, we cannot be happy in the material world and we'll be happy only when we go to spiritual world.
So leave your family behind. Just go to Krishna. How did I know? Is that your question? No. Oh. Okay.
And another aspect is we hear how only by serving Krishna we can be happy, not other way around. So with all these understandings, I'm practicing whatever little devotion service I can do now. Is this fruitive or not fruitive?
It's mixed. But it's good mix. Once upon a time, I was reading a Back to Godhead article. You know, the standard that Back to God has used is one of the articles is a transcribed lecture by Srila Prabhupada. And he was describing Shikshastakam, where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu speaks one way, but then Prabhupada was saying it's actually good for a devotee to desire to be with Krishna. Instead of, you know, janmana, janmani jashvarishri, bhavatad bhakti rahaitiki twayi. We're not there yet, so it's good for us to want to be with Krishna.
Yes, Maharaj. But a question, another question?
But I want to add to that smart aleck comment that I made when you were asking your question. Part of our Go to Krishna program is the duties that are appropriate for us and we have accepted, they also should be fully engaged in service to Krishna. That's also part of our service to Krishna. He's putting the microphone down now. Go ahead, second question.
So from this situation, to make steps towards seeing Krishna as a loving person and trying to see, I want to serve him.
Yeah.
How do you start making steps from this consciousness to the selflessness consciousness, like serving Krishna, only with that motivation I'm serving devotion service?
Do you understand the question? Did you understand the question? Premananda, do you understand?
I can...
Try again. One more time.
So instead of practicing the way I'm practicing now with the
Instead of practicing the way you're practicing now.
No. How do we make steps?
How to make steps?
So that we can go to a consciousness where I will practice saying, this will please Krishna, that's why I want to do this. How do we get there?
She's going to translate for me. Go ahead.
First started Krishna consciousness, okay, you know, the goal should be this and, you know, not material world and so on. So like, it was more like dutiful kind of a thing, you know, doing what is right to do. But as I understand it, okay, how to transform it into a more loving and serving and relationship mode.
And is step by right? Step.
And step by step, yeah.
Well, In Madhurya Kandambini, what my thought is going to, in response to that question, is there are different stages of unsteadiness. And the first one is what it sounds like you described. Utsaha mayi. Utsaha means enthusiasm. And mayi means false. False enthusiasm. The classic example is I'm a new student, I've enrolled in school, and I think I've learned all my lessons. That's not the purpose of school. One may be falsely enthusiastic, thinking, you know, I'm the best or something. Imaginary or, you know, wishful thinking, but not so practical. And then the next one is Ghana Tarala, which literally means thick and thin. Sometimes, sometimes not. Sometimes, sometimes not. That's another kind of unsteadiness. So it's still not steadiness. So to approach steadiness where it's step by step that matches my capacity, and I'll do that which is my capacity in a steady way and prepare myself to take the next position of steadiness or next position upwards toward Krishna and maintain that for some time. That's advisable. Your question, if I've understood your question correctly, is the very same theme of the last seminar that we held in Giranagari during Memorial Weekend. Acceptance and progress was the headline. So first is being realistic with where I am. Accept myself, pretend I'm something other than what I am. This is where I am. This is my spiritual well-being and my material attachments. This is my position. Now, I'll be honest with myself and act in an appropriate manner that will help sustain my spiritual well-being and in course of time, take me to whatever the next position is. And I'll take guidance to recognize my position and to establish what is appropriate for my position and then prepare myself for the next realistic, incremental step forward. You know, so, again, this is a point of close guidance. You know, the question that or the comment that Uma pointed to, which was, you know, having her heart open and being ready to receive from persons who know us and can guide us, and then we take appropriate steps. Is that? Okay. Anything else? Up front, up here. This is a nice way to spend a Friday night, isn't it?
Hey, Krishna Maharaj. Can you give some example how to become detached? Like Maya's influence was so strong, like in practical life or day-to-day life, how to slowly or step by step?
Nice question. Very nice question. I would say three things. Don't worry too much about it. in the sense that worrying doesn't lead to detachment, it leads to more attachment about it. It's because, I mean, it'll happen naturally. So then more positively, think about what are ways that I can practically engage in Krishna's service. So put the cart first. Excuse me, put the horse first. the horse will pull the cart. Put the bhajana kriya first, and then the anartha nivritti will follow. You know that term, anartha nivritti? You know anartha means? Unwanted things. You know what artha means? Dharma, artha, kama, moksha. You've heard that one before? Artha, economic improvement. Artha. Artha means things wanted. Generally people want money, so artha gets translated as economic improvement. But in a more literal sense, it's something that we want. Artha, something desired. So anartha is something undesirable. Something that's in the heart that we don't want there. Whatever that may be. Anger, lust, greed, envy, hankering for temporary things, something that's in the heart. Just, you know, propensity in that direction. So the way to get rid of those unwanted things in your heart, which is the question, because you get rid of the things in the heart, you take care of the attachments outside. So how do we get rid of the things in the heart? It's by devotional practices, bhajana kriya. That's Rupa Goswami's language, so bhajana kriya. So think of those things that you like to do in devotion, or that you know they're good for you in devotion. Chanting. With love, offering what you cook in the kitchen, with love, cooking that and offering it to Krishna. And it's nice. It makes cooking so much nicer. And it's devotional. It's good for you and your family and everything. So you know, those things that are devotional that you like. Some of the people in the room, they like sitting in their home and singing. There's quite a few in this room that really like that. So do that. And you may not be like, you know, the best singer. But you know, if you like singing, then sing. And you do those things. Because what's going to happen when you do those things, or studying Prabhupada's books, or something that you know is wholesome spiritual activity, do that. That's the horse. It'll pull the cart. The anartha nivritti thing will just, the ones that are really easy, they'll just fall off the cart. And then there's some ones that, you know, we're a little more attached to. And then you look through the list of the things that you're more, responding to your question. Here's a list. This is what one of our bhakta leaders did. He would sit down with a new devotee. Let's make a list of what your attachments are. Sometimes you get a nice long list. Okay, let's take a look. And which out of these things, which one would be really easy for you to do without? Real easy. Like real easy. That would be real easy. Okay. What do you think? We'll just like see if we can remove that one. Yeah, we can remove that one. Okay, I'll team up with you. We'll help you remove that one. And then, you know, it was easy. Then you celebrate. Yay! Let me take a look at that list again and see what are some of the other ones. But make sure the spirit of the eradication of unwanted things is in, with the right purpose, in the mood of devotion, to bring one's heart closer to resonance with Krishna. So my interest becomes Krishna's interest instead of my interest is Krishna's interest plus this nice long list of other things. I want to get to that Krishna place. That's where I want to go. And then you're borrowing strength from your devotional activity that makes the heart more cleansed and gives spiritual strength to go and do some of those other things. And then just like the first question that was asked, do that with some guidance. Someone who is a well-wisher, they're not going to like micromanage your life, they're just going to well-wish and help you, support you, and guide you, and you know, you're going to have to do the work, not them. They're not going to come out and clean things for you. But, you know, help you with in your spiritual steps forward. How's that? Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for the wonderful class. Maharaj, my question is in similar lines to Swati Mataji's question. Especially for me, when I'm in this class or in the association of devotees, I'm fully in this consciousness. I'm
fantastic.
Not this word.
Just stay in class.
I wish, Maharaj.
Okay.
But the moment I'm with, especially the work or the general association, I keep seeing the tendency coming back, that envy or all sorts of things. How do I keep that consciousness?
There's only one solution. I mean, there's incremental steps, but the solution is attachment to Krishna. Attachment to Krishna replaces attachment for the temporary. Nasate vidite bhavo, na bhavo vidite sataha. Ubayor api drishtontas, tvanios tattva darshibhi. I like that verse. You persons have heard me speak. A tattva darshi sees the distinction between the asat and sat. And with intelligence and with devotion, powering the intelligence, they withdraw consciousness from asat and invest consciousness in sat. So here the facility is being provided, as you described, when you're with the devotees in hearing classes and so forth. And now you're off in the workplace. So you derive strength from that association. Now you have an opportunity. You can look at it as a challenge, but you can also instead look at it as an opportunity. Now I have an opportunity to practice. And so how do I practice? I should remember Krishna and the instructions that help draw me to Krishna's service. So is there a service for me here in the workplace? Yes, minimally. Well, there's two really easy ones. One really obvious one is when you work, you're getting paid for your work, so how do you regard the fruits of your work? It's to be used in Krishna's service. It's to help support my family, and that's Krishna's service. It's not Krishna's service, it's Krishna's service. So I'm doing Krishna's service. Proof, when that check comes, I'm thinking how to use this in Krishna's service. And here Krishna's giving me the ability to do whatever it is that I'm doing in the workplace. Proof. Krishna can take it away. It's Krishna's ability. So I'm using Krishna's gift to maintain Krishna's dependent part and parcel living entities. So your attention, instead of going to how I can be the enjoyer, next paycheck, or accumulate enough and then I can go buy one of those or do one of those, thinking of the service. So the fruits of your work is one. Then another is by your own character and conduct in the workplace. You can be an instructor of Bhagavad Gita by example. Well, that's a challenge, but it's also an opportunity. You can serve Krishna that way. Then you can, if you put your mind to it, like, it's a classic question. The way that you asked it is, you know, one way to ask it, but a classic question is, Maharaj, I get it. You know, the devotional practice up until 9 o'clock when I get out of my car, because in the car I'm listening to lectures and kirtan, get out of my car, close the door, and at 5 o'clock, you know, something happened. I went and sat down at my workstation, and at 5 o'clock I forgot Krishna the whole day. So I get, you know, the hearing and chanting part, but I don't get the other part. How do you put it together? And an essential how you put it together is the desire to put it together. So each person, each of us here in the room and beyond, have a different way of going about it. Our personal realization is going to be a little different, But if you strive to be in Krishna's service, they're thinking you're answerable to them. They're your boss. You're thinking Krishna's my boss. I'm serving Krishna. And they can think that they're my boss. That's okay. I'll conduct myself in a socially appropriate way. But I know Krishna's my boss. He's the one I'm supposed to please. And I'll act in an appropriate manner in the workplace. But so now, how do I be in Krishna's service from 9 to 5? And even during the lunch hour, because some strange things happen during lunch hour sometimes. People talking about things that devotees don't talk about, etc. If you apply yourself, I remember one devotee, I won't mention their name, some years ago they asked me this question. And I said, I can give you, A, B, and C, and even D, E, and F. But the most important instruction I feel I can give you is just apply yourself to receive from Krishna an answer to the question, how you can be always in his service while you're in the workplace. And you'll get answers. As the Christian saying, seek and ye shall find. If you ask the question, the answer will come. So there's teaching that, it's in the scripture, you'll find it. I'm sharing some things just now. But this devotee, 6 months later, they shared with me what their realizations were. And they tried this, and they tried that, and they tried the other thing. And the realization was they were always in Krishna's service. It became clearer to them while at work that they were in Krishna's service because they applied themselves that way than they were then, say, when they were in social circumstances or out in the marketplace or whatever other things people have to do just, because of living in this world. Krishna will give you understanding. He'll engage you as his instrument in different ways. That if you try to think of, you wouldn't be able to think of, and Krishna will engage you in his service. It's just placing yourself in the internal energy as opposed to the external energy. Otherwise, it's a struggle. Mama maya doratyaya, right? Daivyesha gunamayi. But then there's mama evye prapadyante mayama etam trantite. And it applies in the workplace, it applies in the home, it applies everywhere, not just in the classroom. So at the beginning is the connection through that enter and nourish the bhakti lata, and as the creeper of devotion grows, it'll be manifest all the time. It may take some time for the little creeper to grow to become mature, but you keep watering and asking the question, Krishna, you're in my heart and you're in their heart and I'm not so clear about this, how I can be your instrument. I want to be your instrument. I want to be remembered. He said, it'll happen. Slowly. And chant really good rounds before you go to work. That'll help too. Anything else? Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.